Welcome to the Behaviorist Book Club. We are a community of practitioners focused on helping your clients achieve meaningful and socially significant behavior change. This is your host, Matt Harrington.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Behaviorist Book Club. My name is Matt, and we're going to be breaking down another behavior analysis article. This one is by Tamrazi and Wiskow, 2023, with the title Effects of Omission and Commission Errors During Tact Instructions, once again in Journal of Applied Behavior Analysis. Now, I will say this is one of my absolute favorite topics, errors on skill acquisition programs. And if you had told me 3, 4, even 5 years ago that I would be loving this topic, I would have been telling you that you're smoking the good stuff, because there's no way in the world that I was going to enjoy an article about skill acquisition. In fact, I distinctly remember and very much cringe at the fact that back when I was a behavior technician and an early supervisor, I used to think that behavior reduction was going to be the only path for me. It was going to be the only specialty I would ever have, and I would never ever really need to dive into any of this skill acquisition stuff. Now, there's a million reasons why that's an awful mindset. One, just because we need to be well-rounded behavior analysts who look at a situation holistically and not just from one specific angle, but also because so much of behavior reduction is skill acquisition. See the constructional approach for more information on that. But that's neither here nor there, because the reality is, as an older behavior analyst, I love skill acquisition, and errors in skill acquisition take up a lot of my time when programming. It's often skill acquisition is the thing that gives me the most hiccups, this way, that way, change this, change that, rather than things like behavior reduction. So let's dive into this topic and look at omission and commission errors during tact instruction. Now, when we look specifically at fidelity, it's funny because I think all behavior analysts have a really funny relationship with treatment fidelity. Now, I would be willing to bet that when you were a behavior technician, you thought very little about treatment fidelity. It just wasn't one of those things that came on your data screen or on your paper data sheet when you were implementing. Now, what about when you were in grad school becoming a behavior analyst? You probably read a bunch of research articles and you ran into always a section on IOA and treatment fidelity. Treatment fidelity, a little bit more recency, but you almost always saw something about treatment fidelity. And now that's a little funny, because when I was in grad school, I can tell you what I did with the section of the research paper entitled treatment fidelity. I skipped it. I said, nope, I'm just going to assume that it was done well. If not, it wouldn't have been published. I remember saying that to one of my friends who was in the master's program with me. And that was a really wild thing to think, because knowing what I know now about publication and the publication process, the fact that 500 words, 300 words were left in regarding treatment fidelity and not something else just shows how important it is when editors are ruthlessly trying to hit specific word counts. So in treatment fidelity, obviously now, as a behavior analyst, I know is one of the most important components of skill acquisition and of any solid behavior analysis program. In fact, I've talked to behavior analysts who will refuse to modify any treatment components until they reach a certain amount of fidelity across multiple behavior technicians, because they know, as clinical behavior analysts, they know that it's just not that sometimes the most parsimonious explanation is that fidelity was off. Let's dive into this. I hope I've given you enough background to really appreciate treatment fidelity and errors in skill acquisition if you're in the mindset that I was in the past. So let's dive into some of the common types of errors within skill acquisition, specifically errors of omission in terms of fidelity and errors of commission. So omission are when components of a protocol were not implemented. For example, let's say that we're doing functional communication training, and the functional communication response is break. And every time break is requested, you're supposed to give escape from that demand. you're the behavior technician and you're going about your treatment session and you're taking data or setting up the next skill, and the client asks for a break, but you don't hear them, so you just continue on as is. That's an error of omission. You were supposed to implement part of that protocol, which was give the client break, and you didn't. That's an error of omission. Now, commission is, of course, the opposite. That's when procedures are added, but they were not actually prescribed. So, for example, you're implementing functional communication training, and you're supposed to provide escape, but you also end up providing tangibles because you happen to be doing it in the playroom. And so when the work gets taken away, they also end up getting tangibles, or they get attention, or instead of they didn't ask for a break, but they get a break anyways, right? So you did something that wasn't in the program that was described by the behavior analyst, right? That's a commission. And let's be real here. Errors will happen. The examples I've been using have been in the clinical setting, but I think anybody who's ever done any type of caregiver training, work without behavior technicians, work in the school setting, working with large groups of behavior technicians, can tell you that errors will happen. And your treatment plan and your behavior reduction strategies and your skill acquisition strategies have to be robust enough to be able to handle and absorb those errors and still make progress. See, the goal isn't to avoid all errors. That's impossible. The goal is to plan, control for, and then make progress in spite of having errors. Now, minimal research has really looked into this relationship that errors have within skill acquisition, specifically errors within omission and commission. There's been one study that suggested 80% integrity is more or less sufficient for tacting targets at least, but not much else. And that's good, right? That means if you do things 80% right, your client's still going to make progress. But what that didn't really do is divvy up the difference between commission and omission errors. The examples that I used above were for behavior reduction, functional communication training. But what about for labeling cards? What about audiovisual discrimination trials? So you say, hey, touch the red ball, and the client touches the red ball, but you commit an error of omission, and you forget to reinforce with praise and a big high five, and you instead just move on to the next trial. And then what about commission, where they touch the green ball, but you weren't paying attention, so you reinforced anyways? See, those are examples of errors within skill acquisition, and you can tell that really changes the schedule of reinforcement. Let's take a zoomed-in look at what's really happening there, right? We're going from an FR1 to maybe a VR2, or maybe a VR3, depending on how many errors. Now, if you do 10 trials, or if you do 5 trials, and 80% of them are correct, that means one of them was off. So that means that you, instead of having an FR1, you maybe have a VR2, a VR1.5. And as this goes on for dozens and dozens of trials, you could potentially see some ratio strain. Or you might not. And that's what's interesting about these errors. And that's what this journal article really tries to analyze. It wants to continue the research and evaluate the effects of omission and commission errors on those audio and visual discrimination targets. This study had 3 different participants. They were aged 6 through 7, and they scored at least a level 3 on tacting in the VB map. Now, I'm going to point out here, I absolutely love it when research articles include the criterion referenced assessments that are used by clinicians. It's a huge pet peeve of mine when research papers define their participants based on non-clinician tools, because that doesn't really help the clinician. It's great that you have an IQ test and an ADOS and this and that, but the reality is a lot of clinicians don't have that luxury. Now, we might have a diagnostic report from 3 years ago, but we don't actually have that information in front of us fresh. While we do have criterion reference assessments like the ABLES and the VB map that we can reference. We used an adapted alternating treatment design to compare the high integrity, the commission errors, and the omission errors. That's 3 different treatment conditions: high integrity, commission, and omission. The baseline condition was very simple. We ran through all the tacks with neutral phrases contingent on the answer, and this was to ensure there was no prior history. This was just to say, all right, none of these tacks are mastered. We're starting from a blank slate. Teaching consisted of 12 trials with 4 target stimuli presented 3 different times. Reinforcement was a token board, and they could turn in for increasing amounts of times with preferred items, with tokens delivered contingent on correct responses, and the echoic prompt delivered on incorrect responses. Now, each time a trial was presented, they had a 5-second prompt delay in order to try to get the correct response from the learner. Now, the errors of omission and commission were specifically on the delivery of tokens and reinforcement, right? So omission would be not delivering reinforcement, commission would be delivering reinforcement when it wasn't appropriately available. There was the high integrity condition, which is basically exactly what I described, all steps 100% right every single time. The omission was 33% of these trials did not result in reinforcement, and they did not respond to any prompts for tokens. And then commission, they was delivered praise and tokens and reinforcement for incorrect responses 33% of the time. They then did a follow-up session, and they praised for correct, neutral for incorrect, and that was 2 weeks later. So that was just to really identify where the maintenance was. So what did the results show? They were pretty interesting, actually. With 4 out of 6 participants, of course, the errors did slow acquisition. What was unique is that's 4 out of 6 it was slow, not 6 out of 6. That means a third of the participants actually did just as well with omission and commission errors as they did with high integrity. So that's an interesting finding. 33% is lower than I've seen in the prior research, meaning that integrity does stretch a little bit. Fidelity stretches with certain clients. Now, is that good? Is that what we want with everyone? No, of course not. We want to see high fidelity throughout, but it's worthwhile to think about. Five sixths of the participants were faster with omission versus commission. So this says they preferred an error of omission than they did commission. So they preferred to not get reinforcement than get extra reinforcement in terms of their skill acquisition speed. That actually makes a lot of sense, because when you think about omission, what it does is it creates a variable schedule of reinforcement that might create a sense of stronger rates of reinforcement because we go from an FR to a VR. In terms of commission, what we're doing is we're providing reinforcement when it wasn't supposed to be provided. That actually just weakens the contingency strength. That kind of breaks it and introduces some NCR into the mix, which would actually weaken the schedule of reinforcement. So as an overview to wrap this up for you, this was a really good analysis of errors. This is a really good article to refer back to when you're confused about commission and omission, and even one where you're trying to figure out what's the good fidelity marker for your treatment plans. Like I said before, we prefer that no errors ever happen within a treatment plan, but surprise, they absolutely will happen. And when creating these fidelity sheets, when creating things to constantly track the fidelity of our treatment programs, you should be preparing to look at errors that are going to be strongest, that are going to affect your treatment the most. And what I mean by that is we know that commission is probably a little bit worse for skill acquisition, so we should always be leaning into it. But if you notice a pattern with the client in front of you that omission really screws them up and maybe elicits challenging behavior, that's the errors that you have to be most cautious about. So maybe you teach your clinicians, you know what, because I really don't want you committing omission errors, I'm going to give you a timer. I'm going to give you this. I'm going to give you all these resources. Heck, I'm going to take components of the intervention out or over-reinforce so that if we do commit an omission error, it's not that significant. See, these are changes that we can do within the overall treatment so that we can reduce the effect of our errors. Not the occurrence, because they are going to happen. We can never be perfect, but the effect on the learner. That's all I got for you. I hope you enjoyed that episode. I will see you in the next one. So there you have it. That's the end of our podcast. It would mean the world to me if you commented or shared, or whoever you're interacting with this content, subscribe if you're on a podcast platform. It means the world to me. And also, if you are available,
give a review to this podcast. Give it 5 stars if you love it. Give me feedback if not. I read every single one, and it does a ton to boost the visibility of content like this in the overall algorithm. If you want to continue engaging with the Behaviorist Book Club, the best place to go is the ABA Cafe Facebook group. You can find it just by typing in the ABA Cafe into your Facebook search bar. It is a group of research-minded practitioners engaging and collaborating together to become better behavior analysts through our application of practitioner-focused research. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you in the next one.